Well, let's keep that gospel open, and we look at this great and famous chapter about Christ as the Good Shepherd. And if we take a text, it's verse 11, "I am the Good Shepherd." We often speak and sing about this picture of the shepherd and his sheep. In the days when we used to sing the Venite, we don't seem to do it very much nowadays, we sang, "We are the sheep of his pasture, the people of his pasture, the sheep of his hand," and so on. We've just sung, "Great Shepherd of thy people here." But in fact, as you look at this chapter, there seem here to be not just one picture, but three pictures. So let's just begin by trying to clarify them. First of all, in verses 1 to 6, there's the picture of the shepherd. Then in verses 7 to 10, there's the picture of the door. And then finally, in verses 11 to 18, there is the picture of the good shepherd. And all these pictures seem to center around a typical day in the life of a Palestine sheep. The day begins in the early morning with the sheep gathered for the night in a large enclosure, and it's walled round about. It's not covered, it's open to the sky. And during the night time, numbers of flocks have been gathered in this large nighttime enclosure, gathered together for safety and also for economy of manpower, because during the night, while they're all in this enclosure, there only needs to be one person, referred to in these opening verses, in verse 3, as the gatekeeper, the watchman. There just needs to be that one person watching the gate, watching over them in the night, and the other shepherds can have a rest. No doubt this wouldn't necessarily happen every night, but on suitable occasions it would be like this. And when the morning comes, the shepherds come to this large central enclosure, each separate shepherd, and each shepherd comes to call his own sheep. Several shepherds come along, and he comes to the door, and when one of the true shepherds, comes to the door, he knocks, and the gatekeeper opens for him. He won't open the door for a thief or a robber. If such a one is going to come along and try and get hold of any of the sheep, he'll have to try and come in some other way, climb over, and he won't come to lead the sheep out. He'll come to secretly kill one or two and carry them off secretly in the way that he's come. But the true shepherds, to them the gatekeeper will open the door, and each shepherd will call his own flock by name, and the flock of each shepherd will know their shepherd personally, and they'll follow him and go out after him. And so we see in verse 3, "To him the gatekeeper opens, the sheep hear his voice, he calls his own sheep by name, and he leads them out." So that seems to be the first picture, the picture of the shepherds coming to the nighttime enclosure, calling out their sheep. And opposed to the shepherds are the robbers, the thieves, who climb in some other way, only to kill. So there's the first picture. We then move on, and now the day has advanced. It's the hot noonday. The sheep have left the more sheltered nighttime enclosure. They're out on the high pasture somewhere. But it would appear that even here, there is a smaller and a more temporary sort of enclosure where they can get rest and shade during the heat of the day. And during this time, we see that they go in and out. Verse 9, for instance, "I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture." So you see, here is the picture, not of the sheep having been penned up through the night and coming out for their daytime search for pasture. Here is a different picture. It's daytime. They go in and out, in when they need rest and shade, out when they need more pasture, more feeding, and so on. And in this situation, the shepherd himself forms, as it were, the doorway of this daytime enclosure. And so the feature of this part of the picture is the door. I am the door of the sheep, says Jesus in verse 7. And as they come in and out, he will make sure that they're kept safe. He will make sure that any thief or robber who comes along won't be able to get admittance and so on. There's no mention in this part of the shepherd, just of the door, because all his functions there are concentrated on being the door. And then finally, the last picture seems to take us on to the end of the day. It's evening time, once again. The shadows are lengthening, and the sheep now are beginning to make their way back to the nighttime enclosure. And no doubt this is a time of danger. They're tired at the end of the day. The light isn't as good as it was. It's a good opportunity for the wolf to come and catch a straggler from the flock. And if a wolf does come, what's going to happen? Well, the good shepherd will interpose himself between the wolf and his flock. He will keep them safe. If necessary, he will even give his life so that the wolf is kept away and the flock can be gathered in the night enclosure and be once again safe. If, however, on this occasion, there's only a hireling in charge of the flock, he will run away and he will fly. And we see how the picture has changed here. In the earlier pictures, the shepherd was opposed to the thief and the robber. But now, the picture's changed. He's no longer opposed to the thief and the robber who come in from outside. He's opposed to the wolf and to the hireling. Not so much to the thief and the robber who's coming to steal, but to the hireling, the one who doesn't properly care for the flock and who won't bother to keep them safe if the wolf comes. Well, I think it helps to see something of this progress of the pictures that Jesus is referring to here. Now let's move on and see if we can see something of the meaning of these pictures. And clearly it's not very far to look. It was a very familiar idea in the Old Testament that God himself was the true shepherd of his people. I suppose the most famous psalm of all is Psalm 23, "The Lord is my shepherd." We read in our first scripture reading today from Ezekiel 34, in which there's a picture of the false shepherds, the prophets, the priests, the kings, whom God has set over his flock, and they haven't watched over the flock as they ought to have done. And therefore God makes a great prophecy that the day is going to come when, in place of these false, unsatisfactory shepherds, he will come and will be the true shepherd of his flock, of his people. He will come and look after them. And so, in this passage, what is Christ claiming? He is claiming to be that shepherd of prophecy. The prophecy of Ezekiel 34. There's a very similar prophecy in Zechariah chapter 11, full of allusions which seem to look forward to Christ, although it's a rather obscure passage. But Christ himself is the shepherd of prophecy. And he comes to the enclosure where, over the long centuries of waiting, his flock have been gathered, the enclosure of the people of Israel. And the gatekeeper when Christ comes and knocks, opens. Who is the gatekeeper? Well, the gatekeeper, it would seem, is John the Baptist, the last of that long line of prophets who had been keeping the flock, some efficiently, some very badly, but keeping the flock until the true shepherd should at last arise when at last the day is breaking. And the first disciples Christ wins for himself and leads out from that flock are those who have been disciples of John the Baptist, John who bore witness to him. And Christ comes at last as the shepherd of his people to that enclosure, and he calls his own sheep, and those who know him come out and follow him. And he's contrasted with the thieves. People like the Pharisees, for instance, those who have domineered over God's people and laid upon them heavy burdens consisting of their own traditions. They haven't entered by the gate, nor have they allowed others. They've simply been a barrier. But now at last, the shepherd's day has come. Christ arrives. And if we take those three pictures in the day of a life of a Palestine sheep, we can see how they apply to the day of Christ's presence with his people. The first of the pictures, the picture of the shepherd coming as dawn breaks, holds up for us, in a mirror, as it were, the commencement of Christ's ministry. He comes to his own people, and by and large, as we read in chapter 1, his own people didn't receive him. But those who were his true sheep, they did. They knew his voice. And when he called them, they came out, and he led them out. And that leads us on to the second of the pictures, the noontide enclosure. He's led them out of the old enclosure of Israel, and he brings them now into the new gospel enclosure. He brings them out of the old Jewish one into the enclosure of his new kingdom. And under him, they go in and out and find pasture. He is the door by whom they enter. They can go in and out. They can get security. They can get pasture. In contrast to those thieves and robbers who barred the door, the way of access to the kingdom, and didn't even go in themselves. And then finally, in the third picture, we come on to an illustration of the closing days of Christ's ministry. His day on earth is drawing to a close. The wolves are gathering around through this gospel. We've seen them beginning to muster their forces. They're snarling like wolves. They're the Pharisees again, on the watch to see if they can catch any stragglers. And what is Christ going to do? As the good shepherd, he is going to interpose his body between the wolves and the flock. He will lay down his life for the sheep. And as he does so, he is going to open the kingdom of heaven, open the gospel enclosure, the new kingdom enclosure of the people of God, to sheep from his pastures all over the world. By laying down his life, he is going to offer the one sacrifice for sins forever. And the other sheep, which he refers to in verse 16, the sheep that are not of this fold, through his life-giving, they're going to find admittance. He'll be interposing himself between the flock and the wolves, the Pharisees. And the hirelings, they will flee. And who are the hirelings? Well, perhaps we can put the priests in the role of the hirelings. The Pharisees were not priests. The movement of the Pharisees was a lay movement. And it was a movement that had gained domination in the life of the Jewish people. And very often there was, in fact, opposition between the Pharisees and the priests. And later in this gospel, we're to read that many of the chief priests believed in Jesus, but not openly, because of the Pharisees. They didn't confess him openly because they were afraid of the Pharisees. And so, instead of leading the other sheep to come and join the good shepherd, they fly. But he gives his life for the sheep. So we've looked at the three pictures. The early morning, the shepherds calling their flocks. The hot noonday, the shepherds being the door of the noontide enclosure. And then the evening, when the shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. This corresponding to the three periods of Jesus' ministry. His coming at the beginning, calling out his own sheep. Then in the noonday, being the door by which his people can come in and go out. And now at the end, going to lay down his life for the sheep. Let's close with some application of these pictures. And surely the application must be twofold. How we ourselves can be true sheep of Jesus, how we can recognize him as the true shepherd. Let's look on to verses 24 and 25. The Jews gathered round him and said to him, "How long will you keep us in suspense? If you are the Christ, tell us plainly." Jesus answered them, "I told you, and you do not believe. The works that I do in my Father's name, they bear witness to me. But you do not believe, because you do not belong to my sheep." Now, you see there how there is a sort of a twin deficiency. They don't believe in Jesus, they don't have a true knowledge of him and who he is, and they don't believe in him because of a deficiency in themselves. They're not his sheep, they don't belong to his sheep. His sheep hear his voice. So, how are we to be his sheep? Well, the picture is quite straightforward, surely, isn't it? To be one of his sheep, we need to recognize our weakness, our dependence, our need. And this was the thing that so often stuck in the throat of those to whom Jesus went. They didn't want to be led. They didn't want to be pastured. They didn't want to be folded in the enclosure. They didn't want to be guarded. They didn't want to be delivered. They didn't want to be under an obligation to him. All this they resented. It's only when proud hearts are broken by sin. It's only when we become weak. It's only when we have a love for God in what he's done for him, for us, that we can come and be his obedient, dependent sheep. So we've got to know ourselves, our weakness, our needs. Secondly, we've got to know Christ. Something of his nature, of his divine and human nature. "I am the good shepherd," he says. "The good shepherd for all peoples, for all times." What an astonishing claim. It's a preposterous claim if he be not in fact the Son of God himself. It's also an unreal claim if he's not also one of us. Not only divine, coming as the shepherd of prophecy, God himself to be shepherd of his sheep, but also human, one of us, identifying with us, knowing our needs. In him, divinity and humanity meet. And his claim to be a shepherd is ineffective if he's not the Savior who's done something in order to meet our need. Perhaps we can sum it up by looking at what seems at first sight to be just a little passing allusion. Verse 22-23. It was the feast of the dedication at Jerusalem. It was winter, and Jesus was walking in the temple in the portico of Solomon. The feast of the dedication was a feast of late development amongst the Jews. It was a feast that was held to celebrate the rededication of the temple under one of the great heroes of the Jews in the period between the close of the Old Testament and the start of the New, a man called Judas Maccabeus. And he was a man who, when the tyrant oppressor Antiochus Epiphanes invaded Israel and desecrated the temple, he it was who raised the standard of revolt and eventually brought some liberation. And under him, the temple that had been desecrated was rededicated. And Christ, on the feast of the dedication, walks in the temple. He's told us earlier in this gospel that the literal temple is going to be destroyed, abolished, done away. But he is going to raise it again in 3 days. The temple that he raises up won't be a literal temple of stones. It'll be, first of all, the temple of his own body. But it will go on to be the temple also of all his followers, who as living stones are going to be built into a new temple, a new habitation of God in the Spirit, to offer up spiritual sacrifices. It's winter time, a time speaking of danger, but it's the feast of dedication. With great excitement and anticipation, Christ looks forward to this time when the temple of his body will be destroyed, and out of this there will be rebuilt a new temple, a larger flock of sheep from all nations, all peoples, to be God's people forevermore.